Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them.
Hey, Lawrence,
we are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to get in the game.
Man, good morning once again. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and it's another week of American Tennis, heard on the UR Tennis Network every Wednesday at noon Eastern Standard Time. And I wanted to remind you that on Mondays you have Lisa Stone's Parenting Aces program, and 2 hours from right now we have Jason Hayden's College Connection on the UR Tennis Network. Every Tuesday, folks, you can hear a great program and building in great popularity with his websites, his Facebook, J.P. Weber's We Coach Tennis. There's a lot of action and hits on that website and that Facebook this week, as he's been going over some very interesting ideas, and he always has some cutting-edge stuff. I think he's got up over 2,000 people on that Facebook now, and if I could get up to racing speed, folks, I would on this Facebook thing, but it's got me using every bit of my creativity and every bit of my energy for sure to try to keep up with this stuff. But if you want to keep up with the things I'm doing, go to chuckcreasy.net. That's K-R-I-E-S-E.net. And I've got all the former programs. I've got my information, my books, that 6 books that are out there, my articles, my writings, different every show on UR Tennis Network that we've done over the past 2.5 years has been logged and recorded there. And then I want to remind you also that we have camps in the summertime, and we will have another competition camp over Christmas at the Citadel in Charleston, South Carolina. So much for that. If you want to call in today, it's area code 714-583-6853. That's 714-583-6853. The mission of American Tennis is to get you to stand up, to speak out and say those things, not just cliches and facts and stuff on the surface, but to speak up, talk about your opinions, feelings, and the needs that we have in American tennis, those things that we need to talk about. And do not be afraid of the daggone political correctness. Just be kind. That's it. It's real simple. We just say that address issues, not people. And you can say just about anything you want to talk about if you stay professional. But we've got to talk about this. Otherwise, stuff just goes off in a direction. And we find out, find civil wars happening like we have going on right now with the 10 and under tennis, the USTA, a lot of the stuff and that's going on there that people don't like, and the top-down management. Of course, I've been addressing the past 4 or 5 weeks on this no-ad scoring tirade that daggone ITA is trying to jam down our throats, and through just a fantastic unification of all of the men's coaches, women's coaches, and hundreds of emails and letters that went to the NCAA cabinet, we have at least tabled it for another year. The cabinet said, we got to table this thing. The ITA must not be the all-knowing, all-powerful rulers of college tennis as they make themselves out to be. Edmund Burke says, all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing, good people to do nothing. And I love outliers. I love people who just do things that, instead of doing things right, they do right things. I believe I have Lawrence Roddick on the line right now. Lawrence, I've just clicked you on there. Are you on and listening? Are you on there hearing everything okay?
Yeah, I'm here.
Thanks, Lawrence. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on. And, you know, of course, just about everybody's heard of your brother Andy. And then, but John, I go back to the days when I was coaching at Clemson, of course, and we had to compete a lot against Georgia. And I've got a couple questions out of the block for your family. You were a championship diver and a swimmer, I guess, before tennis. That's what some of your bio says. Is that correct, or were you into tennis?
Yeah, that's correct. I was a springboard diver and was fortunate enough to get a scholarship and competed for the University of Nebraska. And I was an All-American, so I was pretty decent at that. So that's kind of where the competitive stuff started in the family. And then my brother John started tennis instead of going into diving, which I think was a smart decision on his part. Or my mom's part.
Well, you know, my children are swimming right now. I cannot think of anything that's been better that I've put my children in. That, and I've got them in piano, of course, and karate. These are all life lesson, lifelong sport. But the discipline my daughter's getting is unbelievable. I have 11, 9, and 7-year-old. And I've been very good friends with a lot of swim coaches because it is an individual sport. But the discipline is phenomenal, and again, the life lessons are fantastic. Could you just give us sort of a little history about that? Because most people don't know that you guys grew up in Nebraska, the Cornhusker State, I think it is. And how in the world do you get good at tennis in Nebraska? But just could you give us a little bit of your background? Because your whole family is full of achievers, and I'd like to set the table by with that a little bit, so people listening just know a little bit more about you and the way your family went through this process.
Well, like I said, it started off with my diving when I was 8 years old, and my mother was just very committed, and she always looked for opportunities for me to get better in diving. By the age of 10, I was going off to camp in Rochester, Minnesota for 3 weeks without my parents. When I was 11, I was there 4 weeks, and by the time I was 12, I was pretty much gone for the summer training and diving. And again, she was just always looking for ways to get better, how to improve, how to be better. And it wasn't, I hear this stuff bantered around about burnout and pressure from parents, and I never felt that. I don't think John or Andy ever felt that. In tennis, it was just kind of what we did, and we enjoyed it. So then John came along, he started in tennis, and she just learned from what happened in diving, which is obviously a different sport, but some of the principles can carry over in regards to be a great athlete in whatever sport you want to be. And, you know, she learned on John. John was a very accomplished junior player. I think he was a quarterfinalist at the Junior Australian Open when he was 16. And that, you know, he went to the University of Georgia. I think he was an All-American there. And from there, my mother learned more, and then Andy came along. And by that time, she kind of had an understanding of what paths were available and where to go, and she kind of forged ahead on her own path. And, you know, to her credit, it worked out. So that's, in a nutshell, kind of what happened. I don't know if you want me to go into details about anything specific, but
There's a couple of things that you said that are really very key that are always interesting. People talk about burnout, and I had a parent one time saying to me, you know, I don't want my son to get burnout, and the kid was sort of lazy and stuff. And I said, son, with all sir, with all due respect, you got to have a little fire going in the belly first before you burn out. But I've never seen a high achiever get burned out. You know, high achievers, people who are in love with the sport, number one, who love music or love tennis or love diving, or they, you know, I don't think I've ever been burned out on coaching here, you know, and I think that that's a critical thing, that it's a misnomer or sort of a loser's limp type thing, wouldn't you say? I mean,
I would agree. I mean, if the kid loves to play, he loves to play, and take a guess what? He's going to be out on the court playing. It's just like a gym rat in basketball. It's just like a gymnast. If they want to do it, they will be there doing it. And if you know, there's any force, or the parent has to force them to go to practice, or then I think the burnout issue comes into play. But if the kid loves to do it, I don't think they can play too much, to be honest with you. That's just what they love doing.
Yeah. Well, it's what very well said. The other thing is interesting. Your mother was the hard driver. She was the dominant force. Similar to my mother was that way. She was the sort of the harder driver. And I'm not, I'm just observing this. Would you say that she was probably the one that did most of that? Your father, was your father more late? And by the way, I'm so sorry. Most people know that, you know, you lost your father this summer. But was your father more of the laid-back one, or and your mother sort of was the hard pusher?
It was a great team effort. My father was working, building his business, and he was fairly successful doing that and gave opportunities for all of us. My mom was on the ground driving us around, taking us around the country and competing. And they had a very great understanding of each of their jobs, so to speak, and it worked great. And we're very fortunate to have that teamwork. I know it's hard to come by these days, but we were just so fortunate to have that.
Well, again, that's well said. I'm, you know, after recruiting all these years, I'm very aware of who the hard driver is in the family. Usually, the Oedipus thing works for boys. I've seen that the mother. It's sort of like the mom getting on three boys. You can sort of say, it's just mom, you know, and stuff like that. You listen to her, but it doesn't sort of tear away at your self-esteem and all those things. You don't have to feel like you have to validate yourself as much. With fathers who are the hard driver, Lawrence, I found that with the boys, I've had to talk or counsel to fathers sometimes about, look, here, you are his number one role model in his life, and not that you need to back off, but just make sure that you've got to send those right messages. And then it's vice versa. I've directed several young girls or fathers to take over when the mother was dominant force with the daughter. And I've explained that the Oedipus thing works a little bit better. Any thoughts on that? Would you agree, disagree, or
I haven't really thought of it from the perspective of mom and dad and boy and girl. I've looked at it, and it's a hard balance to motivate the children and encourage them, because you know they can do better. And if they listen, then that's great. But if they put up a little resistance, you know, where is that line and how do you get over that or get your point through to them? I've heard people say that, you know, parents can be pushy or they push their kids to do this. And one response I have is, well, how can you push them if they don't know what they need to do? And you need to kind of direct them in the right direction because they're 9, 10, 11-year-old children, and they don't know, there's no way they know that, you know, you have to go out and practice 2 hours, 3 hours a day, or whatever it may be. And so you do need to encourage that child to be in the right places. And I don't think that's pushing. Maybe it's educating. Maybe it's just letting them know that this is, I think it's an education process for the child more than pushing.
Mm-hmm. Well, hats off to your mom and dad. I mean, All-American swimmer, All-American second son tennis player who's doing a great job at University of Oklahoma now coaching. And then also, of course, the best tennis player that we've had in the United States in the past 15 years. So I think coming out of Nebraska, your folks done good, if you want to say that, but that's pretty daggone good. I wanted to ask you real quick, I noticed on your website, you're doing a lot of youth work there in Texas. Could be a good chance to give a plug to your the Roddick Youth Tennis Foundation there in Texas. Can you tell us a little bit about it? Because it sounds like, you know, and that is important that the Roddick name goes down here, and the heritage is much greater than just, hey, these were great tennis players and swimmers and stuff. Could you talk about that just a little bit, and then I have to go to commercial right after that. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll try to make it. But we started it in about 2006. It was the idea, and we met with the Lacoste people, Beryl Lacoste, and she was at the U.S. Open when Andy was in the semifinals that year. I think he lost to Federer that year in the finals. But anyway, we were in New York, and they were staying at the same hotel, and we had this meeting where Lacoste wanted to do some philanthropy work in the United States for the very first time. And we just threw around ideas, and this is what I think needs to happen more in United States tennis. Is we threw around ideas for an hour, saying this will work, that's what I want, and we came up with an idea that we were going to act on, and we acted on it in that we exposed children in San Antonio, Hispanic children, that wouldn't have the opportunity to pursue tennis under the circumstances that existed. On top of that, I told Beryl Lacoste that I needed a competitive component in the program or I would lose interest. I just know myself all too well, and for me to stay engaged, we needed to do that. And so we bumped around and we figured out a way to get the kids through an outreach program and into tournaments, and then from the tournaments into competitive tennis at the state and national levels right now. So that, in a nutshell, that's what it is. We probably touch about 500 to 1,000 kids a year on the outreach side, and we probably have about, I would say, 20 to 30 kids playing tournaments actively.
Well, the tournaments, it's fantastic here. You have the Roddick Series tennis tournaments there that you've started in Texas. Now, these are just your tournaments. You don't have these sanctioned, correct? I mean, they're not USTA managed, governed, and...
They are USTA sanctioned.
They are. Okay.
Yes.
So you've worked through the USTA, and you basically have started these as what is the goal here?
Well, the first goal was just to raise a little money for the foundation. As we've gone down the road, other opportunities have opened up. We have, just for an example, we have relationships with the Venezuelan Tennis Federation, with the Bolivian Tennis Federation, and what has happened is we have a exchange system with them where their players come and visit us in the summer, and they train with us and, you know, hit with some kids in Texas, and then in exchange for that, they give us wild cards into level 5 ITFs that take place in Venezuela, and that we're working on Bolivia. That's going to happen. And, you know, I have an idea that more U.S. kids need to be exposed to ITF tournaments. And this is, they're level 5, so that's, you know, that opens the door for them to get on with the ITF junior career. That's
right, so people don't understand, explain one, you have the major events, and you have 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So the 5 are the entry levels that those who out there who don't understand that pretty much our American kids can go play and get a great experience in these countries, correct?
Correct. And, I mean, at level 5, that's how you start. You got to get your first ITF points, and then you can get into ITF tournaments all over the world, including the United States. I'm a big advocate of it. I think more ITF exposure is going to help American tennis, and I feel very strongly about that.
Well, Andy really broke out with the Jerry Simmons, Shonda Rubin ITF tournaments that he started, didn't he? I mean, weren't they the catalyst, the sort of springboard? I can remember watching Andy, you know, when he was 16, 17 in there, but didn't the ITF tournament sort of springboard him?
Yes, he absolutely. And some people don't know, when he was 15 or 16, he went 8 straight tournaments and didn't win a match. And that soon, you know, he soon got the hang of it, and, you know, he went through the ITF series and was, you know, world number one when he was 17, I guess, a year and a half later. But yeah, that's exactly what was done.
Well, it's going to lead me to sort of setting the table for what we want to talk about after commercial here in a minute. But I've always said that we basically are, if you just go to our USTA website, guys, if you're listening, USTA folks, my gosh, the first thing you got to do, I've been in tennis 42 years, Lawrence, and I go to that website, and oh my gosh, I just can't wade through it. You've got, it's like paralysis by analysis. The first thing they ought to do is have competitive tennis button and everything else button. The competitive button ought to be just streamlined and smooth, and the ITF has always been a pretty good deal for getting through the websites. But the point is, I've always said that the worst thing that we do with USA Tennis is we keep reining in our talent. We don't let the talent run to the front of the pack or the cream rise. They got to go through the 10-and-unders, then the 12-and-unders, then the 14-and-unders. They play low age group, high grade group, 16-unders, then 18-unders. The ITF is pretty cool the way it's done. It's just you've got 18-and-unders. That's it. And you've got these level tournaments. So if a kid is 12 and he's 600 in the world, that's what he is. And Do you agree here? I think that there might be is there a parallel to Andy breaking out of the pack because he went and did the ITF tournaments? That's my question.
Yes, that's my opinion.
That's my opinion too. And daggone it, why the heck do we? I think most of the stuff we only do it because we can. You know, and it's not that it's good. It's just I've always said that too many computers have allowed Barney to run Mayberry. And it's the fact that there's just not enough good common sense on the ground to not paralyze us. The point system and a lot of the things, the top-down management just aggravates me to know. Anyhow, I want to talk about it in a minute. Can you hang on here, Andy, or excuse me, Lawrence? Can you hang
sure.
on here just a second? We got to go to a daggone commercial, and we'll be right back with American Tennis.
This is Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at ChuckCreasy.net. That's ChuckCreasy.net.
Creasy, American Tennis, and we want to talk about making players in America and how do you do that and how do you cut through the red tape and how do you get good in sports nowadays. It's sort of like drinking water out of a fire hose, Lawrence, with trying to figure out as a parent what the heck to do. I mean, I've got my girls now. I've got two younger girls in dancing, and I'm learning there even as I've been in tennis all these years. And then my son's in baseball, and it's the same deal. I mean, it is like drinking water out of a fire hose. And I wanted to set the table real quick here. I've read your stuff, and what I've always liked is you say what you want to say, and you say it in a way that is bold, it's strong, but it doesn't tear people down. It's just you basically are just trying to make points. So I guess, you know, you're a doctor too, and why don't people stand up and just speak out anymore? Everybody's scared, and I don't get it. I do, but I don't, Lawrence. I mean, what do we need to do to get some straightforward dialogue going with things?
I just like this program is designed to be. I mean, they've got to speak their mind and not worry about repercussions. You understand that some people aren't going to like what you have to say, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong. I'll give you an example. I had a discussion with there's a tournament here in Texas that's in Dallas in December. And, I mean, this year, there was ice in Dallas in December. And I went up to a person that had some, I don't know, board member or whatever, had some say-so in regards to tournament scheduling here. And I said, why don't you change that Dallas tournament and switch it out with something and put it in South Texas in December? And her response was, well, that tournament's been there for 30 years. I said, well, so? I mean, what does that have to do with? I mean, and she was a little upset with me, but we can have a dialogue about that. I mean, I think it makes sense to instead of, you know, put it in Laredo in December and put the Laredo tournament in Dallas in May or whatever, something like that. But there has to be a dialogue, and not be offended. Understand people aren't going to agree with you, but at least throw ideas out there and maybe they'll stick at some point in time. But to do that, I think you have to have a base to operate from. And if you don't have a fundamental base of your beliefs or what you're passionate about, then it's knee-jerk. And you go from one thing to another, and you try to put out fires. Instead of how does this fit into my my plan or my base, my philosophy, how does this fit into that? Or do I need to look at it a little differently? So I think having a base to come from and operate from is very important in almost anything you do.
You know, having just that fundamental base is absolutely right. What is really interesting, you know, I've got my one-liners, Lawrence, if you get to know me a little bit. I, I always say is that there's nothing more pathetic than small people in big positions. And I don't mean by wealth or by status or anything, but if you have people in big positions that are closed-minded, that do not welcome differences of opinion, that's the most important thing, is that people, as they climb, they get yes men around them and they go nowhere. But usually they're authoritarian rulers who do that. And you learn that if you've been in sports, you're a doctor, you've been through so many evolutions, you know, and procedures of having to try to be an achiever. And now with your children in the tennis. So I've read your articles about your 12-year-old son now and trying to fight through the system of the red ball, green ball, orange ball, the, you know, all that stuff. I mean, I'm fighting now like crazy on the civil war of college tennis that we've got going on, and the unity. The best thing we have is people are starting to speak up, so I've got to say that. In the USTA, I do have to take my hat off. You know, Hagerty and those guys, they traveled around the country, and they did a listening tour, regardless of whether some people think it was window dressing. You know, I don't think it was. I think they actually, he's trying to figure out what he can do, but he's only in there a couple years. But I want to give you a open door here. But let's say you're the czar of American tennis for one year. You have 1 year. You're the czar, and you have absolute power, authority, all seeing, all knowing. You're the Yoda of tennis, Lawrence. So what? If you want to start from there, you know, talk, you know, a little bit about your frustrations. You've been in swimming. You've seen tennis, though. But why are we underachieving, and how do we sort of right the ship? What can we do to sort of get 10 Andy Roddicks out there in the next few years?
Well, I've thought about this, and one sport that has been in a similar, American sport that has been in a similar position as tennis is in America right now, is women's gymnastics. Women's gymnastics probably 15 years ago was barely top 8, 9, 10 countries in the world. Now they are leading the pack. I don't know exactly what they did, but I think U.S. tennis needs to take a hard look at what they did. I know that the Carolis got involved. I know they have a big old training facility in Houston. And what they do is they bring private coaches in with the athlete for probably 2 to 3 weeks of hardcore training with their private coaches. Beyond that, I don't know much about it. But women's gymnastics is almost in the same place that U.S. tennis is right now. So we would take a hard, hard look at what they did and how they came about that. Secondly, I would encourage more juniors, ITF tournaments. Let's put, you know, instead of having 5 or 10 kids, maybe I'm wrong, let's just say let's have a lot more out on the ITF circuit, really, really going after it. I think one idea I've had is possibly at the 16-18 level for national rankings, have ITF points figure into the national ranking at the 16-18 level right now.
Mm.
That's just an idea.
That's a good one.
That would give college coaches also the opportunity to compare the U.S. kids to the foreign players. Right now, tennis recruiting, hey, great website, fun stuff, but it's U.S. players versus U.S. players, and you can't get a feel for the international component. But doing that, you would have, I would change the age cutoff date back to January 1, so there's a uniform age and we're ITF compliant in regards to the age to play tournaments. So there's a start.
How about no age cutoff? What would be wrong with doing what the ITF does and that doesn't go by age at all? I mean, in my thinking, we should be age-related but not age-determined.
Well, I think I think there should be more ITF tournaments in the United States, and we could do that. But the problem with that is USTA owns all those tournaments, and take a guess, you have to apply to get those tournaments to the USTA, and they don't want ITF tournaments. That's competition to them.
Which is wrong.
They're completely wrong in thinking that way. If I'm wrong, I'd love to have someone come in here and talk about it.
No, you're absolutely right. Are you familiar with the Little Mo program? Well, you are. Your brother won one. And
my
so did Ryan Harrison.
My son played in it last
and
year.
And
great,
I think
great event.
They're fantastic. That
great event. We actually host two of those tournaments here in Texas as part of our
Rodney. You know, yeah, the Little Mo tournaments, what I love is they're not USTA governed, dictated on, or all of the daggone bureaucratical mess that just keeps tournament directors from making money, keeps tournament directors from being entrepreneurial, keeps tournament directors from doing, and the kids, it keeps the parents and kids free. Let me tell you real quick, and I'll intro with this. But I'm on one of those committees for junior tennis, and the guy comes in, Lawrence, and he says, "Well, we've only got 23,000 kids playing competitive tennis now. We'll play five tournaments or more. You've heard all these statistics. We're really, really in trouble." And then I said, "By the way, we can't get tournament directors to do tournaments." I said, "Well, give me two reasons." I spoke up. Give me two reasons why you would want to put your kid into tennis right now. There's nowhere to go for college scholarships. Pretty much, it's just terrible for boys. And I said, it's so hard to get through all the hoops that they have to go through. But then, being a tournament director is the point here. If you're a tournament director now, you basically have to go through a daggone program of micromanagement. You've got to do all these things, and by the time that you get to do the tournament, you then are regulated to a certain level. So you have all of these entrepreneurs, like whether it was a Bob Mapes at Corpus Christi, or whether it's a Rex Maynard in Belton, South Carolina, or these people that have done these things for years. The USTA comes in and say, "Well, sorry, because of our point system and where we need to do things, you are now an L3 instead of what you were." And this just makes people say, "Forget it." You know, so would you be in agreement with what I'm saying here?
I like the
Little Mo's.
Absolutely. I'll give you an example with our tournaments. Ours are USTA sanctioned. We dealt with the 10 and under issue here in Texas. And when we started it, I mean, I'm adamantly against it. Everybody knows that. I hate it. But that being said, we just didn't have 10 and unders in our tournaments. And the reason for that is that then gave the 10 and unders the opportunity to play with a yellow ball, but they had to play 12 and unders. That's the only thing we could do to give the 10-unders that opportunity. We were one of the few tournaments in Texas that did that. There were some spotty tournaments around the state. But, hey, we gave the parents, we gave the coaches, we gave the kids a choice. If you want to play the yellow ball on a full court and you're 9 years old, here's an opportunity to do that. If you want to go play on the short courts and the green and whatever color ball they were, there's other tournaments to do that. What happened was the USTA Texas turns around and mandated that every single USTA tournament has to have 10 and unders.
What?
Yes.
That's unbelievable.
So what happened was people started catching on that, hey, we can go play 12 and unders here, even though we're 9 or 10. And they mandated
and they
just bagged,
they were I get it. They were bagging the 10 and unders. That's right. It's just ludicrous.
Instead of letting it evolve and see what happens, they just said, no, you have to do 10 and unders or you don't get a tournament.
That's socialism. That's
well,
just so wrong. So here I am with my son. Okay, I've got a son, Lawrence, that's 9. And he's got good hand-eye coordination and he's fast. And, yeah, I've had him hitting tennis balls. I have him using regular balls, hitting regular-sized rackets, two hands on both sides, and he can knock the fool out of the ball. I just have him hitting home runs for a while just so he gets good unit turns and all that stuff. But the bottom line on the thing is that he loves baseball. It cost me $35 for 25 games this last year. $35 he got to play. Lawrence, $35 he got to play for a whole season. And these kids that he competed against were tough kids, and he had to learn, and he had this coach that was really into it. He got the and it was just the most awesome experience. I paid $35, and I'm thinking that it's just horrible what we do. We charge people out the kazoo for tennis, and then we put all these restrictions on them as you're getting in. It's like a funnel, upside-down funnel, where it's very narrow rites of passage, very narrow restrictions at the gate. You know, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this. And then pretty soon, then the funnel opens up, and then they have two vague rites of passage. You're playing participation trophies, no ad scoring, 10-point tiebreakers, and nobody really knows who's good. So it is, I mean, they have to have some kind of director of screw-up somewhere there, Lawrence. I mean, that's just, I mean, you know, it's not practical. It's
not
coercive
practical,
leadership.
It's reality.
So, I don't know.
We've
got some callers. I'm going to just ask the callers to hang on a few minutes here. I'll get you on with Lawrence in a few minutes. I got a few other questions to ask him. So, it seems like you are far more entrepreneurial execution of tennis. It should be not top-down but bottom-up. ITF is a good thing because it allows an alternative. The vague rites of passage for our USTA kids right now are pathetic, I think. The 10-point tiebreakers never allow kids to really know if they really are good. When they win, it's sort of like kissing your sister. They didn't really win. The 10-point tiebreaker did the dirty work. They might advance in the tournament. If they lose, it really doesn't hurt enough for them to say, hey. But I'm going to this point. Tim Wilkerson was on the J.P. Weber We Coach Tennis about, it's been about 2 or 3 months ago, but he said two things that are very profound. He said, kids do not play for points. He said they play for rivalries. He said, if I lost to somebody, I would wait a whole year to try to get even. He said, Tim is an unbelievable competitor, Dr. Dirt. He got about 30 in the world and top 10 in doubles. But the point is, he was a tremendous, he said, it bothered me to lose. And that it was, we played for rivalries and we played for the heralded titles of heritage. Like, and I asked him one time, I said, you know, I got on this show, I asked him, would you rather win Kalamazoo or be number one in the country? He said, win Kalamazoo. Would a player rather be number one in the world or win Wimbledon? And so on and so forth. So any thoughts on this point system, and talk about that a little bit?
To be honest, I'm not really in tune with the point system. I have to be to some extent, just going through this with my son so that we get to the places we need to be. But I try to focus on the game. How are they playing the game? How are they executing one shot? How did, say you have a problem with one shot in one match, is that better the next match? If you concentrate on doing, I firmly believe if you concentrate on doing the right things on the courts, the points will follow. And so I'm not a points expert by any stretch of the imagination, so I don't think I would really give a great opinion in regards to the point structure right now.
Okay. All right. That's the structure, though, with the tournaments, I mean, I think that the biggest point you made that is so good is that we do need competition with the tournaments. If we had another organization other than the USTA running tournaments, I think the tennis would really load up again and really turn some people out, because I just think that no one organization should be all-seeing, all-powerful. We need a competition there. Anything real quick you want to say? We've got a few callers. I'm going to take a caller on here in a second, Lawrence. Anything real quick, because it'll go in the direction somehow of the call.
No.
Okay, so let's take a caller here. Area code 269-209, are you on and would you like to talk to this Lawrence Roddick in American Tennis today?
Yes, Coach Creasy. Eric Melville calling from Ohio.
Who's this, please?
I listen to you every week, and I will. I've got a 13-year-old daughter, and I have to get her down to you. But going back to the tournaments, we have one particular club that makes all their money because they don't have a junior program, don't have an adult program on tennis tournaments. Running tennis tournaments, running the level ones, the level twos, and level threes. For instance, this weekend they have a level three, $80 per person. But here's the catch. If we go indoors, they charge $10 per person per match. If it looks like it's going to rain, they drag you indoors. If it's rain, they don't even bother to dry off the courts. Now, how can you, as a parent with competitive players, incur all the money for travel, hotels, and then you're being nickel and dime in the court system like this? And we've complained to the Midwest section, but because they're willing to just do the 10 on the tournaments and not the other clubs aren't willing to do it either, they get all the tournaments.
Boy. Lawrence.
Yeah.
Lawrence, jump in there.
Well, I think he brings up an issue that I've had in regards to tournaments, and I'm probably going to make some tournament directors upset when I say this. But it seems to me that they really like rain delays. All of a sudden, you get to send the referees home, you shorten the matches, you don't have to pay rent for the court fees, and it's a moneymaker for them, point blank. I think there has to be a better effort in managing rain delays and getting the tournament in. That's what I think.
Lawrence, the other day I referred to tennis. I said it was like a beautiful woman in her early 20s or a young man that had all this potential in their young 20s, and now they're in their 40s or 50s, and they look beat up, worn out, and used to a pulp. And I'm saying, and people look and say, what the heck happened to that potential there? But this man has said it right. It's like a business. We have, I once said we've diluted, polluted, and prostituted the greatest game in the world by trying to use it. We don't serve it. You honor it, it honors you. If we try to basically rape and pillage it, this is what happens. And the father here is saying that, my golly, it costs so much money. Lawrence, I'm saying the same thing. I mean, I've got two girls in dance, and they're doing this Irish dancing, and it's awesome. What their legs are getting strong, they're getting confident. But all of a sudden, they wanted to try to start taking them to different places. They had to buy these outfits, and I'm saying, whoa, wait a minute. We're going to gear down here. We're not going to go this route. And if I was not in tennis myself, I don't know if I'd get my kids into tennis. Your thoughts?
Well, one, I agree. I mean, I would have second thoughts about it, but being we're a tennis family, I come from a different perspective on that. But one thing that the father can do, and I would encourage him to do, is go look at the bylaws within his section, and there may be something in there where you can't charge an extra amount to go indoors, and hang your hat on that. But you have to look at the rules and regulations, and if it says somewhere in there, that a fee is a fee is a fee, no matter where you play, then I think you could correct the situation. But you have to go by the letter of what the section writes.
Right, but I want to be fair to the tournament directors up there in Ohio also there, as we're speaking to the father, that they charge a lot because the USTA charges a lot. It's paralysis by analysis again, or that wouldn't be the thing, but they've clogged it down into bureaucracy of having to have referees all over the place, to have The kids have to stay in hotels. When I was coming up, we used to sleep on army cots and gymnasiums, or we would get housing. Well, of course, everybody, the lawyers got involved, Lawrence, and they say, hey, wait a minute. That could be a potential lawsuit here. And they're so worried about the legality of everything that they have gummed it up. Basically, all they have to do, here's the deal, too, like on this, tournaments, playing no ad and all this, they say, oh, it's too many matches. They're always saying, oh, it's too much tennis, too many matches. I always said, just have the kids sign a waiver. I've never seen a person die on the tennis court or ever heard of one. When kids get tired, they miss balls and they lose. You know, it's an acclimatization thing, but we just have dumbed this down, and we're just we've clogged it up from the top down, Lawrence. I mean,
I agree. The other issue with the cost for tournaments is probably supply and demand. There's just not enough kids playing the tournament to make it profitable for the tournament directors. So if we get more kids going to tournaments, I think the cost would come down.
Well, high school tennis is the answer there, and rural tennis. Just quick statistics. 72% of all of our professional athletes come from rural, not urban environments. So out in the smaller communities, towns of less than 50,000 is the sleeping giant. Lawrence, we have 350,000 kids participating in high school tennis, where people would say it's more of an after-school activity than it is a sport, and that's the problem. But we, out of that, less than 7% of those 350,000 play tournaments. And your word on high school tennis, what we might do to really get kids playing, like you were talking about 100 matches a year being the threshold and things. Could you talk about that?
Well, with high school tennis here in Texas, I think high school tennis is great. As a team, high school sports, fun. Yes. What happens is, for some reason, the high school players stop playing tournaments, whether they're USTA sanctioned or non-sanctioned, I don't care. But outside of high school tennis, they don't play tournaments like they did getting into high school and being able to succeed at high school tennis. And I understand the conflict of showing up to practice, and if you don't show up for practice, you don't play in the matches. I understand that. I think it needs to change, though. Something needs to give. When I was a high school diver in Nebraska and California, I just showed up for the meets, and I continued training the way I always trained. I wasn't interrupted. Now, I know there's going to be a lot of other political stuff and social stuff that goes on with that, but there's got to be a way for kids to continue participating in their normal training program and participate in high school tennis. Right now in Texas, that is really, really hard to do, and it does not exist. So
is that because of the control of the high schools? They won't let kids do and you can understand that to a certain amount, a certain degree. But I guess diving would be the same. You don't exactly have real proficient diving coaches everywhere. It's such a skill set.
That is correct. And, you know, I disagree. I mean, as a coach, you got to do what's best for that kid. That's first and foremost. And if you want that kid to excel, you have to do what's best for that kid. Not necessarily what's best for you or any egos to the side. We got to do what's best for the kid, and. You know, take a stand and say, look, this is what's right. And I don't know other high school coaches will probably jump in and say, you know, well, this parent's going to get mad because Johnny was at practice and David wasn't, but he's playing. I understand that. And there's got to be some discussion on how to, handle those issues. I don't have the answer for that. But I do know that not playing in tournaments, not being able to keep up with your training schedule is really, really holding some kids back. And, you know, the big thing is going to be college scholarships, and then we can segue into that whole matter. So,
Well, real quick about college scholarships. We got about 5 minutes to go here. Then we could go 5 hours. But talk about where my experience has been, as for the whole history of USA Tennis, college was always a stepping stone to the professionals. Now, you had two brothers. One went to college at one of the best colleges in America, University of Georgia, and he went there and used that as a stepping stone. And then Andy, of course, didn't go to college. He just went and went the ITF route and out on the tour. And talk about college and what your thoughts are there. We definitely, I guess I could preface it by saying, in the glory days, 84, 85, we had 39 players 1 year that were USA born, go to college, make top 100 in the world. For the longest time now, we only have one, John Isner. Now we do have Steven Johnson and a young man who went to Stanford. But here's the kicker. It's been 20 years since we've had a woman really come out of college. We had the Falcone girl that really went to Georgia Tech, but really Lisa Raymond was the last one that really, really made a huge splash, Lawrence. So where is our next champion going to come from? And
well, I've been having spirited debates on JP's Facebook page in regard to this, and it's interesting you bring up the women's side of it because I've always wondered that. I mean, we always hear about college tennis in the men's game. It's a stepping stone. I was like, well, how does this fit in with the women's game? I think it's a totally separate issue.
It's a bus stop. You get off and stay. It's done, pretty much.
But in regards to college tennis, I think the college coaches somehow, some way, need to get more involved in junior development. I think we have to use those resources. We have to use the facilities. And prepare. We have to get depth in U.S. junior tennis. Increase our depth fivefold. Once that happens, then we'll get more Americans playing college tennis. How do we do that? I think one of the ideas that needs to be talked about is how to get more college coaches, more facilities, actively involved in junior development and use those facilities. You mentioned your daughters were swimmers. I guarantee you some of the top junior swimmers are training with NCAA programs. That's when you develop elite athletes, is at the university.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are where the resources are.
Yep.
And we have to use them.
Boy, you are so true. Jerry Simmons was on J.P. Weber's show yesterday, and he always brought this up. Colleges have the best facilities, the best resources, some of the best coaches. Now, how do we get all the kids? And the NCAA, again, you don't even talk about that bureaucracy. But the bottom line on the thing is they have so many rules. And, you know, I always said rules never keep a bad person from breaking rules. It only stimulates their level of deviance. The problem with rules is that it paralyzes good people from using the advantages that might be out there for them with their entrepreneurship. And Lawrence, we're about out of time here. I wanted to just, thank you. How can people get a hold of you? What's your website so people can get a hold of you?
The best way to do it is on Facebook, Roddick Youth Tennis.
Okay.
On Facebook. That'd be the best way. And then I pop in and out on JP's Facebook page, too. Those are the two best ways.
Okay, and listen, I just thank you for being in this whole debate and this stuff. I love the things you write, and it's very thoughtful, it's thought out, and you can tell that you've been at such a high level of competition in these individual sports things. So thank you very, very much, Lawrence, and appreciate you being on. See ya.
Made in America, born in a heartland, raised up a family. Sam. He's got the red, white, blue, fine high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix with WD. America.
Reminding you that you are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. Keep fighting a good fight. Speak up. Stand out. Stay professional. Address issues. Not people. No man. No woman can find fault. Just we need your help, everybody. Let's jump in and make sure American tennis is on top again. God bless all of you. See you next week on American Tennis.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.